with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Hello, everybody. Good evening to one and all, and wherever you are in the world at this time, you're listening to this podcast, this broadcast. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you and to help you to remember who you are. So in other words, you know, if there's, I thought about this earlier this week, that if there's just one lesson I could just leave people with, or just, you know, hope that they learn first and foremost, is don't go off searching for something you already are. Discover who you are and then be that soulful presence in the world. Kind of like the Wizard of Oz, you know, the Dorothy, the Tin Man, little Toto too, you know, the Scarecrow and the Cowardly Lion. They all go in search of, you know, things that they believe they didn't have. So everybody goes to see the wizard. Until they find out who's really behind the curtain. And then at the end of the movie, hopefully I'm not spoiling for anybody, but at the end of the movie, he says pretty much the same thing. I can't give you something that you're searching for because you already have it within yourselves. You just never realized it. So he helps them to realize it. So again, one of my favorite movies, always watch it when it comes around. And sometimes I catch it on YouTube. I'm just flipping through YouTube one night trying to unwind. So I am very delighted to be with you here this evening and each and every other week. These broadcasts, as you know, are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And I place it all within the context of our relationships with ourselves, with others, and with God or the divine. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you'd like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I just invite you to visit that website. It's www.reclaimingauthenticity.com. Again, www.bbsradio.com/reclaimingauthenticity. Kind of got it backwards there, but that's the correct website address. And if you would like to call in to be part of the show, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And as always, I will be taking your calls after the break. Now, just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me tonight, and again, thank you for popping in at this hour, these broadcasts are podcasted. In case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives, and you can listen to previous shows. It's the same website, but just go scroll down a little bit and you'll see where the archives is. Just click on that and you can find the date and the time the show was aired. And you can listen. Okay. Now, as I always do prior to getting into these shows, you know, for those who might be tuning in for the first time, again, welcome aboard. I am so grateful for your listenership. And I always like to share with new listeners, you know, and everybody, again, you know, just two deep-seated beliefs that have helped shape my outlook on reclaiming our authentic selves as souls. In fact, this is actually the same philosophy in what I share with clients, how I work with them in my mental health practice, regarding how and why I work with them the way that I do. The first is that I believe that people have the answers within themselves. Because after all, you know the kind of life you want to live. You know how, you know what you want to feel and what brings you peace and the joy and the hope. And really, you know what doesn't. And sometimes we're in the wrong place at the wrong time and something happens to us, or we thought maybe that we've already dealt with a lot of our stuff in the past, only to discover later that these unresolved issues keep popping up again and again, or we realize that we keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again. And now we have to go back and go deeper to find a more complete healing. Well, as I was formulating this very first belief, I'm always reminded of the quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson. And he says that what lies behind us and what lies before us, they are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So again, this is how I formulate that people have the answers within themselves. And secondly, ties right into the first. Secondly, I believe that everybody comes into this world with what they already need in this life and for this life, in terms of their giftedness, in terms of their talents, in terms of their skills, in terms of their graces and their personalities and so forth. In other words, you lack nothing. It's the very best parts of who you are, as well as that potential for knowing yourself as a soul. It's all in there. Again, you lack nothing. Because you see, even though we may have had some awful or even some traumatic experiences, we may tend to stop believing that we are already filled with value and dignity and worth, as well as we may be tempted at times to hide that giftedness and the very best parts of ourselves so that other people will not exploit these things from us. I mean, in either way, we end up going through life thinking from or speaking from or living from a place of woundedness instead of from a place of healing and grace and love and peace and wholeness. After all, we are these things. We just haven't fully realized who we truly are yet. And the reason for this is that all of our experiences are taken in through our five senses, sight, sound, taste, touch, smell. But these are all limited. Okay. It's really like empirical evidence that we can measure. So if you ever hear somebody talking about empirical evidence about something, that's what they're talking about, our five senses, the things that we can measure. And I should say, this information that we take in through our five senses is interpreted by our mind. And as a result, we grow up and we convince ourselves that, well, if I can see it, then it must be true. Or if I can hear it, then that must be true. And if I can touch it, if I can just hold it in my hands, well, then that's true. As well as the other sensory related experiences we believe to be the end all be all truth. And yet, these sensory perceptions are limited, like I said, because what is taken in through the brain, the mind comes in and attempts to interpret what we have seen or heard or tasted or touched and smelled based on our limited experiences. Because we're interpreting all the time. Is this a good smell? Is this a bad smell? Is this, what am I seeing? Is this overwhelming to me? Is this a trigger? Is this something that reminds me of something traumatic in my life and so forth? But we do all this and we don't realize that the holiest and most transformative experiences touch the soul. It doesn't touch the mind. It touches the soul. Again, don't go off searching for something you already are. Discover who you are and be that soulful presence in the world. Because, the full realization of who we are as souls really liberates us. I mean, even as Jesus said, that the truth sets us free. And in the context of what he was saying, he was pointing to a higher truth that we are all souls connected to God and since the beginning. And we're not exclusively the body, but also being able to embrace the fullness and the ability to live as souls in this world. I mean, even elsewhere in the Bible, one of my favorite passages in the Old Testament was when God was calling Jeremiah to be a prophet. And he spoke to him these words, which I believe wasn't just meant for Jeremiah, but I think it was just meant to, like, hey, wake up, people. You are these things too. He says to Jeremiah, he says, look, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations. And that latter part is for Jeremiah. But, how hard is it for us to grasp the reality that we existed prior to taking on the physical? in a sense, a body that gives form to our formless souls. But we often limit ourselves to settling for the form. We'll settle for the empirical evidence that we can measure through form. And as a result, we often give up exploring higher truths because how can you measure the soul with a bathroom scale or a radar device or a tape measure? But still, the soul is boundless. The soul is eternal. And therefore, its truths are experienced life to life, soul to soul. Well, if you were with me at the last broadcast, you remember I shared a quote from my teacher. He explains this much better than I do. Swami Parmanand from the Akhand Paradham Ashram in Haridwar, India. And he says, "This ocean of worldly existence gets crossed easily, having climbed the highest mountains and the deepest waters and fire. There is nothing but pure consciousness. So come up to the mountain. However, the problem is that you don't leave your old ways of thinking and seeing behind." So, speaking of awareness and consciousness and leaving the old ways of thinking behind, this brings us to tonight's discussion. I think, therefore, I manifest the transformative energy of our thoughts. Well, if you remember from your school days back in the 1600s, there lived a man by the name of René Descartes. If that rings a bell, he was pretty famous. He was a French philosopher, he was a mathematician, and he was a scientist. And he's often given credit for ushering in, along with other scientific philosophers, he helped usher in the scientific revolution. And he is perhaps best remembered for his quote, "I think, therefore I am." And Descartes' belief was based on him rejecting, in his day, rejecting certain mystical philosophies and unscientific beliefs. Again, he was the one, along with his other philosophical scientists, of just ushering in the age of science. Now, he didn't outright reject God, but he was more in favor of those things that can be proven through science and research and mathematics and reasoning. In others, things and experiences that can be measured by their length and width and weight and frequency and so forth. Now, don't get me wrong here. Science, philosophy, mathematics, engineering, architecture, and so forth are extremely valuable professions that help improve the lives of millions through technology, through medicine, and through life-changing discoveries. Their professions make our lives so much better, so much easier. And so certainly those professions are extremely important. But it's interesting. These things, such as the age of science, or ushering in the age of science and philosophy and mathematics and everything else, and research and the scientific method, these things were also very prominent in the 1990s when science and medicine and research started to insert their voices, their expertise in spiritual matters, such as questions they would raise, such as, well, what are the benefits of physical and mental health for people who meditate or have a strong faith community? Is it possible for people to lower their blood pressure through relaxation and meditation? What are the health benefits of yoga? What are the benefits of prayer, involvement in one's faith community, and devotion to one's religious and spiritual beliefs? And so on and so on and so on. But these methods can only go so far. This is what I mean. To treat and to cure certain illnesses, yes, physicians and other health care providers are needed. To build enormous buildings and bridges and other infrastructure, engineering, architecture, and other disciplines are also required. And, even the work that I do with helping people work through trauma or other mental health issues is all based on good research and other proven methods to help others succeed in removing the mental and emotional obstacles that keep them from living the life they want to live. However, for all of this and more, this scientific method, which is great, it's limited when it comes to matters of the soul. In other words, how can you measure something that is without form? Well, yeah, okay, you can measure the mental and behavioral changes in a person who has and is deeply engaged with their soul. I mean, that transformation will eventually show up, but still, matters of the soul, especially embracing our soul consciousness, who we truly are. It does indeed require us to leave our old ways of thinking and seeing behind in order to take on something better, in order to grasp the immeasurable aspects of soul consciousness. This beingness, if you will, requires not the help of a mathematician or a scientist, but rather the wisdom and the experiential knowledge of those who have embraced their own soul consciousness and now live from a place of beingness, whereby their very presence transforms others on many, 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 many levels. It's like the old parable that talks about a person who goes up to a hot dog vendor and, tries to be smart and just says, sir, make me one with everything. And to his surprise, the vendor replied, sir, I can't make you one with everything because nobody can make you one with anything. You are already one with everything. You just haven't realized it yet. And I wonder if he got extra mustard on his hot dog that day. Well, this is what I mean by letting go of the old ways of thinking and seeing in order to grasp the immeasurable aspects of soul consciousness. And another way of understanding the need to let go of our old ways of thinking and seeing certainly may stem from childhood messages that perhaps you've heard over and over and over again. You could have been very, very young, very, very tiny, but you've heard these messages and you've started to internalize them. Messages such as, well, you're not going to be anything special because there's really nothing special to you. Or, you never will amount to anything. After all, look at your family. Or, you're ugly, you're lazy, you're stupid, you're disrespectful. How often and how long does it take for kids to hear those messages and reinforce those messages from other adults before they start to internalize those and the shame sets in? Well, ironically, according to the developmental psychologist out there, we have the capacity to experience shame anywhere from 2, 3, or 4 years old. I mean, at that age, we're babies. We're coming into being kids, but we're really babies. And that is just way too early to be internalizing those negative, negative, negative messages. And they're all lies that have come from other wounded people who thought, who spoke, who acted from their own place of woundedness. You've heard the saying, wounded people wound people, hurt people hurt people. On the other hand, people who have discovered who they are and how to love themselves love others. People who have learned to forgive themselves forgive others. Because you see, having that experiential knowledge of this soul consciousness enables us to understand way beyond the externals of what we see and hear and taste and touch and all that stuff. And we embrace others as souls, let alone knowing that as souls, we are already one with them. And that's whether or not they see it or believe it in themselves. So in order to survive, let's say, those toxic relationships that may have started very, very young in your life, you may have had to push your giftedness and skills and the very best of who you are way down inside of you so that others cannot see it. And maybe you pushed it down so far inside of you that perhaps you also lost sight of those things. And over time, you really believed and internalized those messages and like, well, it must be true then, because, well, it came from my parents, or it came from my teacher, or it came from other authority figures in your life. Because, you know, whenever we take toxic, distorted perceptions and superimpose them, let's say, over who we truly are as souls, we're going to forever judge ourselves by those standards. Well, earlier this week, I was reminded of the story in Greek mythology of Narcissus. And Narcissus was a hunter whose beauty was known by all, even by himself. I mean, you know, he was just a handsome dude, okay? And interestingly, he rejected all the advances by the women in his town and, ironically, instead, fell in love with himself, as was being reflected to him back when he gazed at a pool of water. I mean, immediately he fell in love with his reflection and tragically never realized its similarity to himself. He was indeed enraptured by what he saw staring back at him. Well, is the same thing true when we look at ourselves in the mirror? I mean, do we like what we see? Do we don't like what we see? But, you know, it really doesn't matter, because it's a reflection of our external self staring back at us, and it's not our true selves as souls. You know, yes, it's an image that's taken in, let's say, through our five senses, you know, but it's also interpreted by our mind and is reinforced by labels. Well, what I see is good, or what I see is bad. Or what I hear is positive, what I hear is negative. Somebody told me I'm handsome, somebody told me I'm pretty, somebody told me I'm ugly, and so forth. And again, these are all based on very limited perceptions. So do we need to care for our bodies with good grooming habits and hygiene? Absolutely. We have to take care of this body, okay? But let's not forget that a mirror can never help us discover who we truly are. And how many of us fail to see ourselves for who we truly are, let alone wanting to continue to search for that person who we truly are and are becoming? Well, right before this break, I want to share with you a story told to me by my Hindi friends that also captures and reinforces this very meaning. It's entitled The Princess of Kashi. Now, long, long ago, in the Kingdom of India, a play was being staged in the royal court, and it was titled The Princess of Kashi. Well, the role of the Princess of Kashi was to be played by a little girl, and since there was no little girl in the palace, the queen thought that the prince, who was about 5 at the time, well, he could be dressed up as a girl, and he can play that role. I mean, it wasn't a big role, and all the prince had to do was just stand there and look adorable. And he did. He looked so adorable as a princess that the queen ordered a painting of him to be made. And when the painting was done, the artist brushed in the words, "The Princess of Kashi," the bottom, and he dated it. Well, some years later, that painting was taken down to the palace center, and it was stored there. By now, the prince was a young man of 20. And yes, he was good-looking. Yes, he was confident and smart, and he was being trained in all the affairs of the land. Well, one day, the prince takes a little walk through the palace, and he found the set of stairs leading down to the cellar, and he decided to explore what was in there. And as he was walking around, he found a painting of a little girl dressed up in the royal garb. And underneath her portrait, her picture, was written the Princess of Kashi. And looking at the date, he realized that the princess in the painting would be about the same age as he was. I mean, she was so beautiful that the prince immediately fell in love with her. And right then and there, he decided that he would marry no one but her. Now, like any young man in love these days, he became very dreamy and preoccupied with the thoughts of the Princess Kashi. He lost his focus on his princely activities and responsibilities, and the king and queen noticed this change in his mood and his behavior, and they started to be very concerned. Well, they asked him what was wrong, but he was too shy to tell them. Finally, the kindly old minister of the court met with the prince, and he asked him, "Dear prince, what's wrong? Why are you not yourself these days?" And after gently reassuring the prince that whatever you say to me, I will keep in secret, the minister was able to coax a reply out of the prince. "I'm in love," said the prince bashfully. "Oh, that's great news," said the minister. "Who is she? Where is she?" "Well, she's the Princess of Kashi. I saw a painting of her in the royal cellar. And the date of the painting shows that she would be about 20 years old, just like me, and I want to marry her." Well, on hearing these words, the minister became silent, and he started to think. He knew he heard of the Princess of Kashi before, but he couldn't remember where and when. So he asked the prince, "Can you show me where this painting is?" And the prince took him down to the royal cellar. And when the minister saw the painting, he immediately recognized who the princess was. And very tenderly, he placed his hand on the prince's shoulder, and he looked him in the eye, and he said in a very serious tone, "I have to tell you something." Well, yeah, what is it?" asked the prince, you know, sensing that something was wrong. You can't marry this girl," said the minister. Well, why not? Is she already married? Is she dead?" "No." The minister then told him the story of the play that was staged 15 years ago and how he, the prince, was dressed up as a little girl and made to play the role of the Princess of Kashi. "Dear prince, you can't marry her because you are the Princess of Kashi." Well, the prince was in shock and bewilderment as he heard the minister's words. And on realizing this truth that the Princess of Kashi didn't exist and that he himself was what he was yearning for, his desire for the princess started to melt away. So the moral of the story is that he fell in love with an image, a reflection of who he was 15 years ago. He was already one with the person in the picture. He just didn't realize it. He didn't understand the connectedness he had from the beginning, as he kept seeing himself separate from the person in the picture, and therefore was unable to understand himself as being more than what he saw externally. Well, I would really like to hear your heart on this matter. So if you want to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. Again, 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. everybody. Welcome back. Again, I am Dr. James Hauck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, earlier in the show, I was talking about how many of us struggle to see ourselves for who we truly are, let alone wanting to continue this search for who we are and are becoming. And along those lines, I also talked about what does it mean for us to be letting go of old ways of thinking and perceptions in order to grasp the immeasurable aspects of soul consciousness. Well, all in all, that we need to let go of those old ways of thinking and perceptions because those things are illusions. They're what we take in through our senses, interpreted through our mind. And it's very, very limited. But that soul consciousness, that soul awareness, it's unlimited. It's vast. It's eternal. It's without form. And so our thinking and perceptions cannot follow that soul consciousness. It cannot go into that space. It cannot go into that understanding. So also, right before the break, I shared the story, The Princess of Kashi. I mean, my Hindi friends love to tell me this story, and I've heard it so many times. I just very politely just sit with them and like, wow. I love their enthusiasm when they tell it. Anyway, it's a story whereby a prince, when he was 5 years old, was dressed up like a girl in order to play a part in the palace play. He then posed for a painting, which was labeled as The Princess of Kashi. But this painting eventually was hidden away in the cellar, which he found some 15 years later. And he immediately fell in love with this little girl in the painting, believing that, okay, 15 years later, she's probably the same age that I am. But a wise court minister exposed the truth that who he really fell in love with was himself. In other words, his error was that he believed he was separate from the girl in the picture. But the truth was that he and the girl in the picture were one and the same person. He just never realized it. He didn't understand this connectedness he had from the beginning, as he kept seeing himself apart from the person in the picture. Okay, and this is what I mean by letting go of, our old ways of thinking and our old perceptions. What is keeping us from being able to see the truth? What is keeping us from understanding that, albeit what we see and hear and, feel and touch and taste, all are good things, but it's limited in matters of the soul. And so when the mind comes in and interprets what we see and hear and taste and touch and so forth, again, distortions, because it doesn't see the fullness of the truth of the soul. And, this is where we often see ourselves as being separated from everybody else and all things. Like we focus on the externals and we focus on the labels, which are often based on fear, which create an illusion of separativeness. Well, I can't relate to that person because they're not like me. I can't hang around that person because, they don't think like me. And I don't know if I can trust that person because they speak a different language or they live in a different part of the world or whatever the excuse is. But what if we allowed ourselves to be able to see, and I mean really see, one another as souls, going way beyond the externals and understanding ourselves as a soul and then being able to see others as a soul? These childhood toxic messages and stereotypes are not the only old ways of thinking and seeing that need to be transformed and let go. Certainly our adult thoughts and words and actions continue to be based on limited perceptions. Just because we're older doesn't mean that we have automatically matured in our ways and our thoughts. In fact, if left unchecked, we got to watch out for unforgiveness and bitterness and resentment and lack of gratitude and contempt, which all these things, first and foremost, need to be healed, and then we need to release them so that the old ways of thinking and perceiving give way to us taking on the identity of who we are and the soul consciousness, that soul awareness. So the question for us then is just how well do we know ourselves? I mean, it's an important question, you know, don't get me wrong, but it's kind of the the rest of your life kind of question that you ask. How well do we know ourselves? Because one of the most important questions we ask ourselves, we do this at least twice, if not more, in our lives. And it's this question of, who am I? Who am I? You know, not based on some, you know, what does my driver's license say, or where do I live, or where do I work? That's not who you are. That's what you do. And your height and weight and eye color, skin color, hair color, all that, again, limited. Those are the externals. But really, deep, 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 deep down inside, who are we? Now, according to the developmental psychologist out there, it's kind of ironic. We first begin asking this kind of a question when we're about 4 years old or so, maybe three or so, in terms of who am I? It's more like a self-discovery. You know, you might say things like, well, I'm a boy and I have this, and she's a girl and she has that. I have a body, I have hair, and so forth. And again, we ask these questions in terms of self-discovery and who am I, and what we see being reflected back at us when, let's say, we look into a mirror. And we often mirror that to one another. You know, we look at one another as little kids, 4 years old, and we were able to discover things. And, you know, again, limited perceptions say, I like you because you have brown skin, or I like you because you have blonde hair, or whatever. I like you because you're a girl. Well, I like you because you're a boy, you know, and so on and so forth. Again, all very limited perceptions, but we're little kids, so we take it as truth, okay? Because we have yet to fully realize that there is a deeper meaning way beyond our sensory perceptions. Well, the second time we ask this question as to who am I is somewhere in and around our early 20s. Only this time asking who am I has to do more with an internal self-discovery of how we want to live our lives. I mean, what values and morals have I been raised with? And now which ones do I want to keep? Which ones do I really want to let go of? What's really important to me? And what are some things that are not so important to me? And so on and so on and so on. So how well do we really know ourselves? And knowing who we are and answering that question, I don't know, who am I? It's probably where most people struggle to understand what it means to strive to be one with everything and one with everybody. Because oneness, on a certain level, has to do more with understanding how we are connected to all people and all things. For example, let's say that we want to add sugar to our morning coffee, okay? It's just something you can do tomorrow. Well, being one with everything doesn't mean that we become the sugar that we put in our coffee, but rather we are connected to the sugar in terms of the people who have supplied the sugar to the store and all the employees who work there, as well as we're connected to the growers who planted and harvested the sugar cane, which will eventually become the sugar we add to our coffee. And out of this awareness, hopefully, comes a sense of deep gratitude and respect for all that we have received through the hard work and the efforts of others. I mean, this is like deep appreciation. It's not just a spoon of sugar. It's much more than that. I mean, when's the last time that you looked at a spoon of sugar before you put it in your coffee or your iced tea or putting creamer in your coffee? Where did that come from? Do we see the multiple connections that we have with things that we take for granted? But again, realizing our oneness or our connection with all things should really wake us up to never take for granted anything in our lives, but rather it should cultivate in us deep sense of compassion and gratitude for all people, regardless of whether or not they supply things we use every day. Everything and everyone, therefore, is a gift. And being in relationship with others doesn't mean what can I get from you, but rather what can I give you? Not what I can get from you, but what can I give you? This makes much more sense, because whether or not we realize it, we are connected to everyone and all things, directly or indirectly. A long time ago, I don't know, maybe this was like back in the 80s or the 90s or 2000s, if you remember the game 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, where, you try to follow the connection of Kevin Bacon to other actors and entertainers or producers and so forth. Sometimes you have to, you can only name four, but the game is like, 6 Degrees, or can you name six people who are connected to Kevin Bacon? So when you think about it, we are all interconnected to all things and all people in this universal and soul consciousness. Well, a while back, I talked about that when it comes to wrestling with life's questions, many, many, many people are often overwhelmed not only by the concept that the answers they seek lie within themselves, but also the underlying assumptions that all this talk for inner peace and inner freedom and joy and unconditional love and soul consciousness are all too good to be true. That those things belong to somebody else. Well, the truth is that all people have the potential to fully realize their soul consciousness when they leave their old ways of thinking and seeing behind and seek to reclaim who they ultimately are as a soul. In fact, whether it's within Western or Eastern cultures, when we are ready, effective teachers and mentors and leaders throughout history have been characterized by those who help pull out of others the very best of themselves. Or, in other words, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. But still, there are many people out there who, out of ignorance of fear, would rather live in their grief and pain and sorrow. For many, they're just not ready to let go of their wounds. They're just not quite ready to let go of that old way of thinking and those old perceptions, and really embrace the possibility that they can live in forgiveness. They can live in gratitude and ultimately love for themselves and love for others. Emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds is something else that needs to be healed and released. And when you think about it, we know what we have to do here. Because think about it this way. We think that if we say something harmful or we do something harmful, well, that's never going to come back on me. Yeah, it does. Remember the game 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, that interconnectedness? Every negative thought, every negative thing we say, every negative thing we do comes back to us eventually, which often reinforces the wounded parts of ourselves. And you've heard me say this before on this broadcast, we have different ways to understand this concept. What goes around comes around, or what you sow, you're going to reap. And even, some people explain it in terms of karma. Is it just another way to understand that no matter how you say it, humanity lives in this giant echo, that whatever goes out from us is going to return to us, just like we hear the sound of our voice echoing back in our ears when we're in a tunnel. Everything we think, everything we say, and everything we do is energy. And unless we transform that energy first in healing ourselves by healing our own wounds, It's going to come back to us exactly how it went out from us. I mean, this is a phenomenon that I run into time and time again in counseling clients who very, sincerely want to heal from their past. They want to improve their relationships. And whenever a person is struggling and whatever they're struggling with from other relationships, it's more than likely they're also struggling with the same issue in themselves. Again, what negative energy is being sent out echoes back sooner or later. Now, for example, let's say a person who is filled with bitterness. I mean, they just it oozes from them. They are just filled with bitterness from a previous hurt or betrayal. More than likely, will view everything and feel everything from a lens of bitterness if they don't heal that. And again, this is not a right or wrong. It's not a fault issue. A person has been deeply, deeply hurt or betrayed. Of course, they're going to want to guard themselves. Of course, they're afraid of the healing that's right there before them. They don't know if they can trust it because they don't know if they can trust anybody. And unfortunately, over time, it transforms into bitterness. And that begins to shape how they see everything, albeit limited, from this lens of bitterness. Or let's say a person has experienced tremendous hurt from broken trust in relationship. And unless this is healed and transformed, they're going to view everything and everybody with suspicion. And this is very difficult. Again, it's not a right or wrong issue, but it's a matter of understanding woundedness. It's very difficult for people to understand the phenomena of emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds. What goes out has first come from within. Hurt people hurt people. Sometimes I hear in counseling sessions, a person might say, "Well, I don't care. I will never forgive that person for," which sooner or later in our therapy sessions, what they usually are saying is, "I'll never be able to forgive myself." Or, if you might hear, "I can never trust another person because," again, over time, usually it means that I have difficulty trusting myself. Or, "I can't stand it when a person says or does this." Then usually means I can't stand myself whenever I say or do this. And I just can't love that person because will also mean sooner or later it's going to come out. I also struggle with loving myself. Again, how we are with others is often how we are with ourselves, and vice versa. How we see others is often how we see ourselves. Unhealed, unresolved wounds distort how we view and interact with the world. And again, find healing from those wounds, to forgive, to let go, to understand that you are more than what you have become so far. You're more than your wounds. You're more than your pain. You're more than those tears. You are so much more. You are an eternal soul. You just haven't realized it yet. Let go those distortions. Let go of that pain. Let go of that limited understanding of what people are telling you about you. I have to say from personal experience that by understanding the background of those who hurt me, it's allowed me to take the necessary steps to, closer to forgiving and releasing those burdens instead of carrying them around in my woundedness. I don't want to carry it around any longer. I just don't. But when I discover where their woundedness came from, I completely understand. And given human nature, I probably would have acted out that way had I gone through what they've gone through. But I don't want to carry that burden around anymore. And I don't want them to carry around that emotional, self-inflicted wound any longer. That's what forgiveness is, giving other people permission to put it down, transform their thinking, and hopefully moving them closer to understanding who they are as a soul. Anthony DeMello was one of those spiritual teachers and mentors who always sought to empower others and to bring them to higher states of self-awareness and self-discovery. And he often told a story to illustrate that we can let go of former things in order to take hold of something better. And he was very fond of telling the story of a villager in India who happened upon a sannyasi. Now, a sannyasi is a wandering enlightened one, let's say, who, having attained enlightenment, understands that the whole world is his home, that the sky is his roof, and that God will look after him. And so he moves from place to place, the way you and I would move from one room of our home to another room, and so forth. And the villager came across this sannyasin, and he says to him, "I can't believe this." "Well, what can't you believe?" said the sannyasi. "What is it that you can't believe?" "Well," the villager says, "I had a dream about you last night, and I dreamt that the Lord said to me, 'Tomorrow morning, you will leave the village around 11 o'clock, and you will run into this wandering sannyasi. And here, look, I've met you." "Oh, I see. What else did the Lord say to you?" asked the sannyasi. And the villager replied, "Well, he said to me that if the man gives you a precious stone that he has, you will be the richest man in the world. Kind sir, would you give me that stone if you have it?" Well, the sannyasi tells the villager to, "Well, just hang on a second." And he rummages around through his knapsack and he retrieves an object. And he unwraps it and he says, "Would this be the stone you're talking about?" And the villager could not believe his eyes. It was the largest diamond in the world. And he holds the diamond in his hands and he asks, "Can I have this?" And, "Well, of course," said the sannyasi. "Take it. I found it down by the river. You're welcome to it." And the villager took this diamond and he ran. He was just so delighted. And when he got tired, he sits under this tree on the outskirts of the village and he clutches this diamond to his heart and he experienced great joy. And so the villager sat under this tree all day long, clutching this diamond, and he became immersed in thought. And it finally dawned on him. And toward evening, he went back down to the river where the sannyasi was meditating. And he gives him back this diamond. "Master," he said as he bowed, "could you do me one more favor?" "Sure. What is it?" said the sannyasi. "Could you give me the inner riches that makes it possible for you to so easily give away this thing that would have made you the richest man in the world?" That's what I mean. Letting go of former things in order to take hold of something better. And if we are truly capable of sending out negative energy from unresolved emotional, physical, psychological, and spiritual wounds, then we can also send out through our transformed thoughts, our transformed words, our transformed actions, positive energy that gives life, healing, and grace. Because they've come from those places of were once wounded, and now they have been healed and transformed. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, I am so grateful that you have decided to spend this hour with me. Again, if you'd like to leave me a comment about tonight's show, please do. Just go on the website, you'll find all my contact information, and just drop me a line and let me know. I would be glad to discuss all these things with you because my heart is just for all people to come into this soul consciousness. So in 2 weeks, I look forward to spending time with you again. So until we meet up again, everybody be safe, everybody behave yourselves out there, and may God hold us in the palm of God's hands. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauk. It's all there. Just wander over to reclaimingauthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.